This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh my goodness, what a beautiful day. April 11th, 2010. He'd asked me that back about when I started elementary school or even when I finished high school, I would have said, oh my gosh, where are the Jetsons, cars, and where is my personal robot? But for some reason, that's not happening, but it is a beautiful day, and hopefully everyone is enjoying it. Let me take a moment and thank the folks who are listening down in Lovingston on 94.7, and thank Gene Theory for giving us the underwriting today and the support. Gene Theory with a selection of new and gently used designer denim, including Joe's, Page, Sevens, and Citizens, as well as tops and dresses and accessories. Gently used items can be purchased up front from customers to Gene Theory on 4th Street Northeast on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville. For more info, 296-GENE or online shopgenetheory.com. Also, Gene Theory on Facebook and Twitter. All right, let's jump into our conversation today. We are going to be talking about the Charlottesville area, Charlottesville, Albemarle. And I think that this question sort of, there are many parts to it that go further out from just the Charlottesville-Albemarle area. The area water supply. Guests today are from the Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, including Dee Dee Smith. Dee Dee.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for being here. And Kevin Lynch. Kevin.
Hi, Rick. Good to see you.
And you, sir. It's been many years.
It has been a few. Good to be back.
And thank you for taking the time. It is a beautiful Sunday, and many people are outside doing their thing or driving somewhere to do their thing, and we're sitting here in a slightly muggy and stuffy.
But we've got this view.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can see it.
We do. We can see it. So thanks for coming in. Phone number for participating in today's conversation, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number. So 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dee Dee Smith and Kevin Lynch here from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, as we talk about the water supply and some of the issues that go with it. And whichever one of you two wants to jump in, we talk about the water supply. And for those who even just follow the basic headlines over the last several years, there seem to be three options for helping. Many people can go back to what was called the drought in 2007?
2002.
See, it seems like yesterday to me. Dee Dee, you're going to have to get a lot closer.
Okay.
But the drought of 2002 when the car washes had to shut down for time periods, when you were only supposed to use so much water in your home, not flush your toilet except during trips involving number two, and those sorts of things. And so issue became, gosh, we can't have this happen as our community grows and grows in numbers. So we need to be concerned about our water supply. And the conversation seems to have grown into three parts. Do nothing, because we don't need to do anything, and it's all sort of made into a bigger deal than it needs to be. Build a new reservoir. And we'll get into that in the time, the place, and the time, and the cost. And then we don't need to build a new reservoir. We need to dredge the current reservoir so it's more towards the original percentage of use. Is that right? Those three options?
Well, I would actually say, Rick, that we probably do have more options than that. But that's a good encapsulation of what the discussion has kind of revolved around. I think it's important to for your listeners to remember, and I think you did describe it well, that what we're talking about here and the kind and the very expensive plan that is being proposed to enlarge the Ragged Mountain Reservoir is really about storing water. It's not about where we're going to get our water every day. In normal years, and even in normal years involve sometimes kind of, you know, periods of a low-level drought. What we're talking about is storing enough water for a drought as bad as it was, the worst that we've ever seen in 2002, under the assumption that our community is going to grow tremendously and under the assumption that our community is going to be using water the way we did last century. And quite frankly, that is one of the big assumptions that is wrong. Their data is wrong is one of the problems. But I do think that is where those questions as to what do we spend the money to enlarge Ragged Mountain? And we're talking really in the upwards of $200 million just in case. Or do we, in the case of our group, we're proposing that we restore the resources we already own and avoid those large costs and a lot of environmental damage.
I think that's a good way of framing it, is it's not so much about three scenarios, more a philosophy of, do we build a bunch of new expensive infrastructure, or do we maintain the infrastructure that we have to get better use out of it? I don't think anyone is advocating the do-nothing scenario. That's a viable scenario that would actually get us through a couple decades.
I do that a lot. that's why I thought of that one.
And that's, in honesty, that has been the default scenario, because while Ravana has been talking about building massive new infrastructure, in fact, they haven't been very successful in that. And so the default scenario has been do nothing.
And now, when you mention Ravana, you're not talking about the river or a business.
No, we're talking,
you're talking about Ravana Water and Sewer Authority.
Right.
So when you say Ravana, you're talking about the organization, the authority that's in charge.
That's right.
Of part of this problem.
That is Ravana, the board, the water authority that is responsible for making sure that we have adequate water storage. And I should say that while Ravana has been largely doing nothing, the reason that the do-nothing scenario works is because people in the community have been conserving at a pretty admirable rate, really. We've dropped our water usage substantially in the last decade, and that's partly because people are more cognizant of the water usage. But a lot of it is also just the way that technology has progressed. You know, you mentioned that we don't have the flying cars yet. But we do have low-flow toilets and low-flow appliances, and we have rain barrels, and we have a lot of ways that allow people to go about their daily life using less water, really without even having to change their habits very much. And so while Ravana hasn't done much to expand the water supply since 2002, the citizens of this community have done quite a lot to reduce demand. We've actually conserved about the equivalent of building a new half-billion-gallon reservoir, because we use so much water, or so much less water than we used to.
We are talking about the area water supply and the 50-year water supply plan that has been on the table for several years now. Our guests today, Kevin Lynch, D.D. Smith, members of the organization Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. We'll be taking phone calls in another 10 minutes or so. And I recognize, to those who are listening, that this is potentially a one-sided conversation. We have Dee Dee and Kevin here from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, and their water plan is one part of the options that are out there. And this organization was brought forward because of unhappiness with the other plan that was out there, which is to build the new reservoir, build a new reservoir. The goal for the day is to put forth as much basic background information as we can, so that those of you who are listening and have some maybe simple information about it from what I call the the first paragraph, folks. You read the headline, you read the first paragraph in the newspaper article, and then you move on, which applies to me in many situations. So we're going to do that, and then we need you, and I'll do my best to sort of be the devil's advocate in many of these situations. So write the phone number down, stretch out the fingers, don't pull a muscle, and we'll start taking some in a little bit. So we're out there. We have these options, and we'll discard my do-nothing option. There are two options on the table in a very loud manner. Are there other options aside from building the new reservoir or dredging the current reservoir that have received any intelligent, yes, let's do this?
Well, there's a lot of other options out there. As far as whether they are sort of the front burner, A-list options, I think there's certainly a lot that are viable, but not too many that have been given credence by the Water Authority. One of the obvious ones would be Beaver Creek. You know, Beaver Creek is part of our urban water system.
And that's the Crozet area.
That's the Crozet
area. Because one
of
the things I want to make sure that we do throughout the hour is not assume that everyone who's listening has been here long enough to learn where all the places on the county
are. Yeah, that's a good point. But to give you a little history, when Albemarle or Ravenna Service Authority, Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority came into being, at the time, Charlottesville owned most of the reservoirs, the South Fork Reservoir, the Ragged Mountain Reservoir, and the Sugar Hollow Reservoir. But Albemarle also had a few reservoirs, the Beaver Creek Reservoir and the Mint Spring Reservoir, and the Chris Green Lake Reservoir. The Chris Green Lake and the Lake Albemarle Reservoir. And they basically brought these two localities' reservoirs together to create the urban system. And Beaver Creek was one of those reservoirs, as was Chris Green Lake, that was intended to be used for water supply. And still can provide water to the urban system, a fairly substantial amount of water to the urban system, although Albemarle County has taken the position, no, this is really our reservoir. We want to reserve this for future growth in Crozet and not count it as of something that could be used in the urban system, except in a case of drought. So we do have that reservoir. The county just doesn't want to count it, which is a whole nother issue.
A quick sentence or two as to why.
Well, I think they see Crozet growing faster than even the Crozet master plan shows. Right now, Crozet uses a fraction of the water that the reservoir supplies, and even for the next 50 years, is only expected to use about a third of the water that that reservoir can produce. And I think it just comes down to parochialism, really. That and maybe a hope by the supervisors that Crozet will grow more than it has so far. It's not a sentiment that I share personally. Another easy option would be to lower the intake of the dam on the South Fork Reservoir. That's the South Fork Reservoir is our largest reservoir in the system, and it has about 400 million gallons of what's called dead storage because it's below the level of the intake. So lowering the intake would be another easy option. Another one that's a fairly new option is the idea that we could use groundwater, and there's been some fairly recent work.
Don't be messing with my well.
Well, there's some pretty recent information that suggests there's some major aquifers in Albemarle County, mostly up against the Blue Ridge Mountains, in the area where the foot of those mountains there. But there's also some in the southwestern area as well. Well, the southwestern mountains. It's actually east as far as the county goes. That's another untapped resource. But the major, I think you're fair in stating the two major entities that are out there are dredging versus brand new dam. But again, it really comes to maintaining existing resources versus brand new.
And can we just clarify here that what we're talking about when Kevin is talking about resources is what resources do we have in the city and county in case of a drought? Again, we're not talking about what how we get our water every day on a regular, normal basis. We're just talking about what happens in a drought like 2002. And so that is why enumerating what our resources are, what is available to us, just in case. That doesn't mean we'll be tapping them on a regular basis. But it's absolutely paramount that we recognize all the resources we have, which is why this new report of groundwater is so important. This is, as Kevin said, this is a new report. It came out of the Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population Project. It was done locally, and they have now recognized that we have a tremendous resource here that we could use just in case.
11:16 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking with Dee Dee Smith and Kevin Lynch, members of Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, about the 50-year water plan and some of the conversation that has been ongoing for the last several years about ways to increase the water storage. As Dee Dee makes it more simple for me, because my vision of the conversation goes back to the drought of 2002, where I was told, even though I'm on the well, is to use less water so that my well doesn't dry up. My friends who live downtown are told to flush their toilet less and close up your sink when you're shaving so the water doesn't run the whole time, and just get your toothbrush wet once and brush your teeth, and simple things like that, but also some more greater and serious concerns about ways to conserve water in an everyday fashion. Let me ask, you're talking about water storage. So there's no more rain for months and months. We hit a true drought. How many days water do we have out there that we can use without lowering the intake at South Ravana or any of the other issues that were just mentioned?
Well, the way that the safe yield is calculated is that they look at not so much what would happen if it didn't rain forever, but what would happen if we had the worst drought of record.
And which is what?
Which was actually 1930. 2002 came really close.
Okay. Because I also read somewhere that 1972 or 1977.
Yeah, there was a bad one in the 70s. And it also depends on what you call, when you talk about droughts of record, people have different definitions of it. But the one that the Ravana uses is really just the rainfall that impacts their reservoirs. So while the farmers might say, well, we had a much more severe drought in 78 or something like that, from Ravana's perspective, it's all about what reaches the reservoirs where we store drinking water.
How much drips down?
Yeah, how much can
drips
we get
down the side of the hill?
And if it's raining like heck over on the eastern side of town, but we don't capture any in the reservoirs, then they still consider that a drought. So from their perspective, the worst drought was in 1930, and 2002 was almost as bad. And if we got either of those droughts right now, we could go through either of those droughts without even having to conserve. Now I'm not saying that that's what we should do, our system right now can produce almost 13 million gallons of water a day, and we're only using about 10, so we're fine.
And how many days is that? I mean, are we talking 30
see, if
days,
we, if
60
we broke
days,
that
90
down,
days?
We've got, that's about 120 days off. If it just rained, if it just stopped raining. But what you got to remember is, I don't think we've ever seen a time in recorded history where it just stopped raining for 120 days. What happens is you get really low rains, or it maybe only rains once a month.
The land gets so dry that when it rains on day 42, that it all seeps immediately into the ground and nothing runs down.
Right.
Let's remember in 2002, at the end of the drought, and we all remember it. We all remember how hard it was, how scared a lot of people were, how many restrictions we had. But at the end of that drought, one of the worst in history for our area, there was still 60 days
Let me repeat
actually,
that.
It was 120 days.
It was 136 days.
Of water left. And we were using more water at that point, before the drought started, than we are using now on a regular basis. Our water use has come down, even despite the fact that our population has gone up. Our water use has gone down, which tells us that we actually could go even longer now because we're not using as much water.
All right, let me tell everybody it is 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call. Kevin Lynch, D.D. Smith, we're talking about the water supply here in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area. I'll get Dee Dee to come back in just a second because I turned her microphone off. So I don't know who heard her. But it is the Marcus of Dogger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Today, highs 75 to 80. Cooler in the valley. Mostly cloudy over in the valley the rest of the day. In Lynchburg tonight, it'll be a little bit of rain. Lows 40 to 45. And then mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs 70 to 75 and 65 to 70 in the valley. Right now, it's a beautiful day out there. 63 in the valley, 65 in Lynchburg, 68 in Richmond, 67 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Specialty Guitars Plus from here in Charlottesville for being with us. That's where beginners and rock stars are welcome at Specialty Guitars Plus. They feature instruments and amps, lessons on guitar, banjo, bass, piano, and violin, all for beginners or advanced students. Consignments are welcome, too. That's Specialty Guitars Plus in the Woodbrook Shopping Center on the lower level behind the 7-Eleven. And more online at specialtyguitarsplus.com. And whether or not you're playing your tunes, you want to go to Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where April is hiking and backpacking month. Whether you're experienced or just starting out, the staff at Blue Ridge can send you to all the right places. You can also pick up the pamphlet, 15 Favorite Hikes in Virginia. Details are at brms.com. And you'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville. And they have two locations in Richmond. All right, back with Kevin Lynch and Dee Dee Smith. Dee Dee, you wanted to clarify something.
Actually, this is sort of a minor point, but when I say that we're using less water, what I mean is that we're using less treated water. And that's a very important distinction because it's extremely expensive to treat water. And in this country, what's interesting is that we actually, the water we use, only somewhere between 10 and 25% of it has to be treated. We use water for things, I mean, think about it, like flushing toilets and washing cars and you know, watering lawns, things that do not require treated water. And there's just so much technology coming coming online, and the trends in our country are all about not treating water that doesn't need to be treated, and harvesting it from the sky instead of from our rivers, and lots of wonderful conservation movements that are happening right now. Our world is changing as we, and that is why we're seeing this decrease in demand. And the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, unfortunately, refuses to acknowledge this. They are building like it's the last century.
Well, let me ask. So I asked a couple questions about water usage, and what I picked up out of that conversation just before the break was the problem isn't necessarily with the water usage. The water usage has gone down. We're talking about storing more water. Well, why? I mean, if the water usage has gone down, conversations that I've had here in this studio in the past show that while the increase in our community is going up, it's going up at a lesser rate than many expect. And whether or not you want it to go up or not, or you want to close the door and tell everybody else to go away, why are we worried about how much water we need to store if we have all these places that we're not even using?
Well, that's a good question. I think that's partly the point that we've been making. What's really happening here is that Ravana is really still stuck with a 90s model of water usage and development plans. They came up with a plan that would have worked great for the 1990s, but not being a business, they're not adjusting their plans like any normal business would. If you were a construction business and you were building homes in the 1990s, or even up to the last couple of years ago, there might have been at one point what seemed like a bottomless appetite to consume whatever products was out there. But that's no longer the case. And that's what we're seeing, is that that's what's happening with water. And not really because people are changing their habits in dramatic ways. It's more the sort of easy technological stuff. It's toilets. I remember 10 years ago, I had a toilet, and we used to joke that it didn't stop flushing until the load was in the street, because it was like a 10-gallon toilet. And, now you get these that are a gallon. Or people are using rain barrels a lot. I put a rain barrel in my backyard. I mean, it's an easy thing. It's not like we have to bend over backwards to...
But what are you doing with that? I mean, I can put a rain barrel in my backyard, but I'm not going to use it to... Am I going to use it to clean my house?
No, just to water that. Just basically to eliminate outdoor watering.
Are the city and county working together on this?
Yeah, actually...
Because the two issues are different.
Yeah.
Whether or not you want to, the two basics that we're talking about, dredge or build, and we're going to get into that now that I feel like I've learned enough to sort of learn my sides. But are the city and county, who often don't work together, picked a side?
They're working less together, but in concert, I would say, because both the Albemarle County Service Authority and Charlottesville have water-saving initiatives. I think the Charlottesville is a little bit more aggressive, but Albemarle is good as well, and they have promoted water savings. There's a rebate. If you put in a low-flow toilet, which is why a lot of people did it, you can get a $100 rebate from the city by installing a low-flow toilet. It almost covers the price of the toilet. You can get low-flow shower heads. Periodically, they will make rain barrels available at a wholesale cost. So they're doing a lot to try to encourage people to use less water, and I think it's been successful. But what they haven't quite realized is, okay, we've had the success over the last 10 years. Now, do we really need as much and as expensive a storage mechanism as we thought we did 10 years ago? I think the answer is obviously no, but they haven't quite made that leap yet.
If we have the two sides, if we have the new reservoir, update the current reservoir, are the city and county on the same making the same choice, and which choice is that?
I would say, actually, no, they're not. The city and county have very different approaches, at least in terms of where they're putting their money. The city council is much more receptive, and in fact has been a leader in investigating and getting as much information as we can about restoration of our current resources. And quite specifically, they paid for, or the big, at least paid for most of the current dredging study, the study to look at the feasibility of dredging the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir, much to the chagrin of the county, who didn't want that information. This study is just coming out now. The first phase has been completed. It looks just amazing. I mean, there is more water in that reservoir than they said there was, and there is less sediment, and it is not silting in as fast. I mean, this is just really new information that will become incredibly valuable. The consulting firm doing it, HDR, is doing phase two now, which will investigate costs, and that will be very interesting. It's valuable information. That would not have happened if the city didn't step in.
So my question is, if there's more water and less sediment, why bother?
Exactly.
Why do I need to spend the money dredging the reservoir?
Well, that's a good point.
That's a good question.
And when I said no one was advocating the do-nothing approach, I think we still wouldn't advocate
doing
nothing.
I'm still trying.
But to your point, we could probably get at least two or three decades just by doing nothing, because you're right, there is more water. And people are using less. Now, I still don't think we should do nothing, mainly because I think that as owners of these reservoirs, and the city still does own the reservoir, we have an obligation to maintain it. Just as, you know, we're in this building, and if you did nothing to maintain this building, you could still probably get 10, 20 years out of it and cut your expenses to zero. But it might not be your long-term best strategy. You still got to make sure that the roof doesn't leak on a periodic basis, and you still ought to do basic upkeep. And in the case of the South Fork Rivanna Reservoir, it was built about 44 years ago, and it had a capacity of 1.7 billion gallons. And we've lost almost a third of that capacity just through neglect. And so by bringing it back to its original condition, we've not only laid ourselves out with a good and inexpensive plan for getting water, but we've taken a resource that we own and maintained it so it'll last another 100 years. If I could back up a little bit just in the timeline, I think one thing that it's important for people to understand is that shortly after 2002, we came up, the city and county and Rivanna, with a water plan. It's the plan that people are paying for now, because we raised rates by quite a bit in 2003 and 2004, which you may remember, we went from being about the third cheapest water in the state to being about the third most expensive water in the state.
When you say came up with a water plan, you mean that the city, the county, and Rivanna Water and Sewer Authority sat down and said, here's what we need to do to make sure that the next time there's a drought, we don't have to be quite as concerned about it.
Yes, and that happened in late 2002. It actually had already been happening, but 2002 really focused it. And it was a very different plan than what we've got on the table right now, which
give me the basics on what that plan was. If we're paying more for it, what am I paying for?
What you're paying for and what we agreed we'd do in 2003, or actually end of 2002, was dredge a reservoir, put a bladder on the reservoir, which would give it more storage.
I don't understand what that means.
That would be to...
Oh, to me, bladder means I have to go.
Okay.
It's a big balloon.
A bladder is putting, a big... It's extending the height of the dam, and it's a similar thing that what we did with Sugar Hollow Reservoir almost 10 years ago, where it's an inflatable lip that goes on the end of the dam, and in the case of Sugar Hollow, would give it about another 4 feet. I think it might have been five.
So instead of raising the top of the dam by stone or
concrete, you can go a few feet with an inflatable bladder.
You're telling me that we're just making a big balloon to do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And so that was
less expensive. Does the same thing. Less expensive.
Yeah. That was the cheapest gallon per dollar
dredge,
by far. Dredge
the bladder
and repair the Ragged Mountain Dam, which we knew at the time had some spillway issues. Still does have spillway issues.
Right, because that dam is 60 years old or more,
it's
correct?
It's about 100 years old.
Okay. It was
what they called a cyclopean dam, which is concrete dam with big boulders in it. That was around the turn of the century. And then in 1930, a earthen buttress was put up against it. But it still doesn't have an adequate spillway, and we've known for some time that it didn't have an adequate spillway, and we put money in the budget in 2003 to fix the spillway.
All right.
And let's note that 2002-2003 plan also recognized conservation, which the current plan does not.
All right, 11:33 here in the wake-up call. As we talk about the current water issues and the 50-year water supply plan, with Dee Dee Smith and Kevin Lynch from the organization Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan. And we're here because of organizations and businesses like Petite Bebe, a children's and maternity boutique offering everything for babies and children up to 14 and for mothers-to-be. Petite Bebe carries sustainable products for kids, including strollers and car seats, clothing and gift items, as well as a baby shower registry. You can find Petite Bebe at 1st and Water Street in Charlottesville. They're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and Saturdays from 10 to 5. And you can find them online at petitebebe.com. And since I don't speak French, I'm sure I ruined and mispronounced that entire business. But it doesn't change all the things that they offer. All right, so we're talking about what we've been paying for since 2002, which included dredging the current reservoir.
Right. And may I make another comment about why we really should consider dredging the current reservoir, whether or not we actually need the water right now? And that is, it's a really valuable community resource. And I think a lot of people recognize that. That does beg the question as to who should pay to help dredge the reservoir. But also, if we allow that reservoir to continue to silt in, and may I note that the current plan that Ravana is proposing allows plans, actually, for the current, the South Fork Ravana Reservoir to continue to silt in, that we're talking about an environmental catastrophe down the road. Maybe not soon, but if you allow all of that silt, and over a long period of time, it will continue to pile up behind that dam. Some generation down the road is going to have a big mess.
Why is that environmental? I grew up on the Chesapeake Bay, and we had a little cove, and that silted in so that we had to move the dock where the boat was to another area. I see a caller calling in now.
Yeah, but you didn't have an artificial dam that silt was piling up against.
That's true.
And what we're talking about here is basically the reservoir returns to a riverine situation, but elevated. It's an elevated river. So it's, you know, this is, as I say, it may not be have a serious impact in the next, you know, couple decades, but down the road, it's serious. We should be maintaining this resource. It's just bottom line. It should have been maintained up to now. It has not been. We have a responsibility to the community and to our descendants to maintain this reservoir.
Right. Just like any other infrastructure you build, whether it's a building or a road or a bridge, you just don't get the useful life out of it if you don't maintain it. And to not do so is negligent.
And it will provide, and then the side benefit is, regardless of how you calculate how much water we need in the future, it provides a tremendous amount of storage. There is one other factor with the South Fork Ravana Reservoir, and perhaps this is getting too technical, but it has a very, very large watershed. And what that means is like 260, 90, something like that, square miles. What that means is that when it's in a drought, when it starts to lower, when South Fork starts to lower, you get a little bit of rain and it fills right back up, because that 200 and some square mile watershed contributes, all of that rain that falls in that watershed flows back into the reservoir.
I see the phone lines ringing. Give Kristen a moment, because she's on one line now. 979-0919 is ringing up, and 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll free, and I think she's just finished on that one. So if you feel free like calling, please do. But give her time to answer the phones. We're here talking with Dee Dee Smith and Kevin Lynch from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan.
Maybe we need to
change that. It's very catchy.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard? From all the information that I read to prep for today's show, it seemed like everyone was so off in projecting the water usage. Why is it so hard to project what our water usage might be? Because we're not talking about being off 5%.
We're talking 30%.
But we shouldn't beat up on them too much, because it's a national phenomenon that this is happening everywhere. In fact, there was just a paper that came out of Northern Virginia where they've been looking at their demand over the past, I think, almost 4 or 5 decades. And every time they redo their demand, it keeps getting lower. And that's partly because when estimates for future demand are made, people tend to be conservative, and they look at what's being done in the past, and not so much projecting what advances might happen in the future. So as technology does inevitably progress, demand keeps getting lower. And again, it's not, you know, I think they've made some mistakes, but they're not any different than what utilities have made all around the country. It would almost be like, you know, imagine if you were trying to figure out what you needed to budget for computers for the next 20 years. Well, you certainly can't base that on what you've been paying for the last 10 years.
Right, I'll give you that one. All right, 11:39 on the wake-up call. Caller, hang on just a second and let me do my needs.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in
this week in the Hook, as many here know, WNRN host Tim Davis passed away on Friday after being shot earlier in the week. The Hook shares what can currently be explained about a seemingly unexplainable event. Albemarle County's budget cuts include turning off the lights for Little League nighttime baseball, and the colorful past of the Jefferson Theater is examined from 1912 and through its seedy past to the beautiful present. The Hook, allowing us a moment to remember Tim Davis. And let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be here today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online at brgtshirts.com. All right, Dee Dee and Kevin, got your headphones on? And let's see, we got Keith from Charlottesville. Hi, Keith.
Hey, I'm out of my tractors. I've only heard a little of the show, but I heard you talking about the issue of maintaining the reservoir, and I just have a comment on that more than a question, in that I'm on that reservoir probably 3 days a year, a week for the last 20 years with a racing shell, and we have just seen repeatedly that big storms have come through, large trees have come, and a number of us have called RWSA and asked to be able to cut up the trees and move them out of the way because, as we predicted, when they get hit the bottom and get moored, all the sediment comes, hits there, and creates islands. And now we have these islands slash potential wetlands, which I think we have to deal with in some way or another. So I really have a question also about the role of the RWSA, and it seems we've had 20 years of neglect on that reservoir. And if you're going to put more money into fixing it, what are you going to do to change the RWSA so that they actually maintain it?
That's a really good question, because the lack of dredging is not the only maintenance area where Ravana has been negligent. And as you mentioned, clearing trees is a big one. That's just in the reservoir. But they've had the same issues along, you know, right-of-way along pipelines, not keeping those open. And when they do it, they just come in and they bush hog everything down to the dirt, so it's done in a very environmentally insensitive way. They need to focus more on maintaining the resources that they have, period. And I think the dredging is a part of that, and certainly if you've been rolling on the reservoir, you see the hydrilla that's really in the last decade has gotten much more extensive, and yeah, there's trees in it. That really is a basic maintenance function. But I think when it comes down to what can listeners take away from this and actually do about it, one of the challenges with Ravana is it's a staff-driven organization. Now, recently, there were two elected officials put on it, Ken Boyd from the county and Dave Norris from the city, and that's been very positive change in how they do their governance. But the board is still dominated essentially by staff. You have Gary O'Connell from the city, Judy Mueller from the city, Bob Tucker from the county, and what was Gary Fern, their water director from the county. And they have a very different, first of all, they're not directly in the line of raising rates. When a public official raises rates like we did in 2003, you catch all kinds of hell from your constituents. They're isolated from that, and they tend not to be price sensitive. Now, supposedly, the city council and the board of supervisors have authority over Ravana. They're supposed to appoint these members. So getting Ravana to maintain the reservoir, I think, is going to require residents like yourself to say to the board of supervisors, look, we elected you, and you control Ravana. We need to see more of a regular maintenance program. And not just with the reservoir, but with everything. They just don't do maintenance.
But, Kevin, don't they have millions of dollars in the bank already?
They could. There's nothing preventing them from doing maintenance. It's just, unfortunately, it's simply not a priority for them. It won't be a priority for them until their bosses, who are the elected officials, start making it a priority for them.
But Keith has just brought up a really good point, too. And as Kevin noted earlier, Ravana Water and Sewer Authority raised their rates in 2002, 2003 after the drought, and have now been stashing that money. They get somewhere in the around $5 to $6 million in excess each year that they have now put aside and they're using for this so-called future water supply. But they have tens of millions of dollars in a basically a fund that they could be using, and they should be using, in my opinion, to maintain their resources. So, yes, I think this will all factor in as we get the costs associated with dredging versus the there are now in May and June, we're going to not only get those costs, but a new revised cost for what it's going to cost if they want to build their huge dam at Ragged Mountain. And as we're comparing these costs, we need to remember that Ravana Water and Sewer is sitting on a lot of public money.
Mickey, thanks
well, thank
for that. That's a great question.
Now, I'll let you go.
All right, phones are open, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Kevin Lynch and Dee Dee Smith here from a group, Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, as we talk about the 50-year water supply project, 979-0919. I see it's ringing now. Kristen will grab that. Call the toll-free number if you need to. Here's a question that came in on the toll-free number. Is you guys, your promotion is to dredge the current reservoir. Where do you put the sludge?
Well, that's exactly what is being investigated now with the consulting firm. That's phase two, and we're waiting. There are many, several, actually, very interesting options. That is one of the many, many scare tactics that were used to discourage using dredging as an option, is that you're going to have massive amounts of sediment, and you're going to have to truck it away, and it's going to be loud, and it's going to be smelly. All of those things are not necessary, and we eagerly await what we feel will be very positive news about just those issues.
Yeah, and even without waiting for the study to come back, I think some uses of the sediment are fairly obvious. When you get upstream of Panorama Farm in the area that you mentioned, Rick, near Raysford Bridge, that's almost all sand and gravel up there. And that type of material is very easy to reuse. It dewaters very quickly. You can basically bring it out, dewater it in piles, and ship it off to be used the next day as sand and gravel is either asphalt mix, concrete mix, roadbed. There's a lot of uses right away.
And you can go to the Hook, readthehook.com, I believe is their website, and go back in the archives. There's a 2008 cover story about how the sediment could be used to help the airport extend their runway.
That's a great one. Yeah. And that's only a couple miles away.
But let's actually also note that this phase one of the dredging study showed that there are no toxins in that sediment, and it is, in their words, good for agricultural use.
Yeah, as you get lower in the reservoir, like below Panorama Farms, and significantly lower than where you live, then you start, there's less of the sand and gravel, and you get more of the silts and clays. They do take longer to dewater, but as Dee Dee mentioned, have agricultural use, can be used as topsoil. So there what you need, it's a trade-off between needing more space, but you can get quality dirt back out of it once you dry it out. So I'm not too worried about having a place to dewater. I think in an ideal situation, there'd probably be several places. You'd probably have one operation for the upstream part of the reservoir where you got more the sand and gravel materials, and then one for the downstream where you have more of the clays, the topsoil type stuff.
All right. Let's take another call. We have Richard. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, and how are you?
I'm wonderful. Bring on your question or comment.
My question is why we don't do a new demand analysis of the water that's required by the community. And I bring that forward because in 2001, we stopped using data. That's 8-9 years ago. We stopped using data to compute the demand analysis. It's an old analysis. And the do-nothing scenario is impossible because we've already done things that are conserving and are taking effect in coming to fruition now. We're taking the golf courses off of the water system. We're taking the car washes off of the water system. Ravana itself is not using its backwash water. They're using raw water instead of makeup water. All these things have really impacted the demand. Both Dee Dee and Kevin have been very active in coming up with what changes to the demand are there. But the community should celebrate that we are now using 28% less water than we used during the drought. This is a fact, and I don't know why we don't do a new demand analysis and really get into what kind of capacity do we need during these droughts.
Well, thank you, Richard, because that's an excellent point, and again, it is one of the components that the City Council particularly has asked for. They just discussed it at their last meeting. Dave Norris, particularly our mayor, feels that we cannot make a decision, a sound economic decision, without having a new demand analysis, because the old one...
But Water and Sewer adamantly and vocally in public says that they would be, quote, scared to do a new demand analysis.
Well, they will be, because it's going. What it would show is that we don't need this massive infrastructure that they have proposed that we build.
Yeah, and it's important to point out that Ravana has to do a new demand analysis anyway by 2011.
Yeah, that's a legal issue.
Yeah, it's a requirement of the state planning process. And
we don't know whether we need that dam or not. And if we do build that dam, they're going to let a huge reservoir, South Fork, silt in, which would displace some of the capacity that they're going to pay to create.
Well, that's right. And I think
Richard, good points. All right. I'm going to hang up so somebody else can call.
I think the reason that the Ravana has been refusing to do the demand study, even though they know they have to do it, is because they know this. They know that it would require changes in their planning. It was interesting when Tom Frederick was asked about the state plan, which we have to update in a little more than a year from now. And someone asked him at the chamber, shouldn't we, how does the state plan affect what we're doing right now? And he said something to the effect of, well, we want to get our dam built first. We want to get our stuff done before we update the state plan, because then we can just put in the state plan whatever it is that we're doing, which is about the most ass-backwards way you could possibly plan. Imagine if someone wanted to build a house and you wanted to see the blueprints, and they said, well, wouldn't it be a lot easier to draw the blueprints after you built the house? Because then we wouldn't have to think about it. We could just write them down from what's there. And that essentially is what Ravana is trying to do. They are purposely waiting until the last minute to give the state.
What is their reason for doing that? I mean, I can understand. I'm sure that there are people listening who are saying, well, Kevin, of course you're going to put it that way because you don't want to do what they're proposing. But if he said that, and I can't prove or disprove that he did, but why would that be their methodology?
Well, they're very invested in getting new infrastructure. And that's understandable. Having been on city council...
Are you saying it's like the bank who wants to get more money through credit card
absolutely.
Sales?
It's any organization. And I saw this a lot when I was in council. Any successful organization wants to grow. It's part of its DNA. Just like WNRN, you know, you had a good beginning in Charlottesville, and you're putting up towers around the state, and that's real positive. The difference with commercial businesses, though, is that commercial businesses can go out and get new customers when they want to grow. The problem with being in city government is it's the same 40,000 people. So if you want to grow, you're basically just reaching deeper into the pockets of these same poor 40,000 people. And that's one of the frustrations and the challenges of being a city councilor, is that your staff, they want new stuff. They want to grow. They want bigger stuff. They want shinier stuff. And you have to say to them, wait a minute, hold on. The city hasn't grown. You know, the county's growing a little bit, but we're still the same number of people. You can't reach deeper into the pockets. But it doesn't keep them from wanting to do that, not just with water, but just basically with everything you can imagine.
But, I mean, we're, again, 11:54. I see the phones ringing, 979-0919. I'm sure Kristen will get that in a second. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Just a few minutes left here with Kevin Lynch and Dee Dee Smith from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan. And you mentioned how WNRN is growing, and it's because of folks like those at Salad Creations who just opened up their Harrisonburg store, and you can go over there. They opened Monday 4-5. Salad Creations has all sorts of salads, including free-range chicken, turkey, and even wild Alaskan salmon. And everyone's impressed how I squeeze that in there, aren't they?
Nicely done.
And I do want to remind you that in the next 5 minutes at noon, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. And here at NRN, that means Time's Gone By, which is 80s and 90s alternative music. So at noon, it's Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music.
Let's remember, too, Rick, that... along the same lines as Ravana Water and Sewer Authority is not a business. We are captive to them. Those of us in the urban water system, particularly those of us in the city, we don't have any options other than to use public water. And by that means, they are not accountable. There are now a couple elected officials, but Ravana has not been accountable to the people that they charge.
Yeah, that's a good point, because until recently, no one on that board has been price sensitive at all. At least the elected officials are somewhat price sensitive. But going back to the radio station analogy, imagine if you created here at WNRN a facilities subcommittee that was in charge of building a new facility for everybody, but yet they had no idea of how they were going to pay for it, and they didn't really care how they were going to pay for it. They would design you, I'm pretty sure, a pretty swanky place where every DJ got their own floor with spacious views. And they would, you know, we'll put whatever equipment you want in here and give you a better view and some nicer chairs.
Another phone line.
Yeah, whatever, you know, whatever it is you want. And sure, everybody on staff loves it because it's so easy to operate. It's so new. It's so 21st century. But then when it comes down to, all right, but how are we going to pay for it?
Right, fundraiser time.
Then they all go, oh, wait a minute. Can we raise this much money? And, you know, Ravana hasn't even had that conversation yet.
No.
That's what's frustrating to us is because, and I can tell you from having been on council for 8 years, they're going to need to have that conversation. And the answer right now looks like, no, you can't afford this plan. It's too much for what it is that we need.
Just a couple minutes left. Dredging. Okay, so there's a place to put the sediment. But as somebody who grew up on the bay, what are you going to do about the watershed? How do you not affect the watershed and the plants and the animals by dredging? I can envision this either pipe or barge outside of my window tearing up the reservoir to get the sediment at the bottom.
Well, there'll be some impact, no question about that. But I think most of the impact will be positive. If you look at, for example, what's in the reservoir now, half the reservoir is a big hydrilla bed. So, I mean, which is an invasive species. It's
explain that real quick.
Well, it's an underwater plant that is pretty noxious. It's a weed that was imported here from, I don't know where it came from. But it's the plant equivalent of the snakehead fish. You know, it just comes in and chokes up reservoirs, chokes up all water bodies. And
not to mention the sediment that is smothering everything that's living on the bottom of the reservoir. Actually, the kind of dredging that they're talking about doing, hydraulic dredging, is pretty non-invasive from an environmental point of view.
Right.
This is not an environmentally damaging procedure, and in fact they say any kind of stirring up recovers very quickly.
Tons of stuff that we should have gotten into that I didn't, as usual. Seconds left. The website
seavillewater.info. So
seavillewater.info.
Info as in information. Please go on, we've got lots of information.
And when's the next public discussion about what to do?
Well, we are anticipating a public meeting about this phase two of dredging in May. They haven't set a date, but watch for that. This will be absolutely critical. And people
can contact their elected officials anytime.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's, I think, the most important thing is in order to get accountability. And again, it's something that I saw during elected office. When people push an issue, it's hard to ignore it. If the only people that you're hearing from are staff and they have their own agenda, things tend to move in that direction. So We need the people who are going to pay for this project, which is all of us, to start demanding some accountability.
All right. D.D. Smith, Kevin Lynch, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Lots more information out there. Go to SeaVilleWater.info, and I know that there are other places. Go back to that, go to readthehook.com and find that 2008 article, and there are others, very informative. All right, next week, Sean McCord will be here for me while I travel.
All right.
Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.